What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Willie and D. Mace on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason back with us, Nick Frazier as well, here on a Wednesday morning. Willie Donick out today. As you might have heard yesterday, Willie is moving his son into college. Today, we will get the full report tomorrow when he returns in studio. We'll hear how much he cried on the drive home. He's preparing himself, Derek. We were talking about this yesterday. He is preparing himself for the waterworks. He talked about how he felt when he moved his daughter into college a few years ago. But the biggest change for Willie, and we'll have to get more of a report about this as time goes on, he and his wife are going to become empty nesters now. Now that his son is off to college. Derek, your children have graduated college,
yes.
Correct?
Uh-huh.
What do you remember about moving your kids into college, and how did you handle that experience of sending your children off into the world?
First, it was you know, as any parent, or most parents, I hope, you know, when you go to drop your kids off, it's one of those excitements because they're, you know, they've accomplished one phase of their young life, meaning, you know, going through adolescence and high school and graduating. And now they have their eyes set on something bigger, a much bigger prize. They're wide-eyed. Everything's new to them. So you take them, and it's like the excitement of putting their room together. But then once all that sort of ends, the day before, you start to realize it sets in like, oh, they're not going to be around anymore. They are going to develop their own little friendships, their own little life, their own little family there at college. And as a parent, you know, you start to worry about them, one, as I think as all parents do. And you just hope that the things that you have instilled in them, that it will carry them through, you know, their college days and then beyond. But, you know, my daughter was ready. She's much more mature, obviously, than my son. He's mature, but he's nowhere near my daughter. But we knew she was ready, but it still didn't, you know, change the fact that she wasn't going to be around anymore. So her mom bawled. I think her mom bawled every day we were there, cried. And I cried at the end, you know, but it's just a dad being protective over his daughter and whatnot, but I knew she would be okay. She's one of those kids that is extremely smart, but not only smart, she sort of that street smartness in a sense, you know, like you could just put her and you could say, okay, she's good, even though I'm gonna worry about it because I'm her dad, but she's not gonna deal with the tomfoolery, you know. My son, on the other hand, you know, extremely, and I mean extremely bright kid. I mean, it's amazing to me. But I looked at him different, maybe because he's the baby. And I was worried about him, for one, because he was so insulated, you know, being a young child, the youngest. And I was always worried about him. And when we finally got to that day, I bawled and cried. And then I came home and I sat in a chair. Like the next day, I was sitting eating breakfast and I started crying again because he wasn't around. And then both of them are gone. You know, neither one of them are at home. So it hits you in waves. One day you can be great. Then all of a sudden you think about something and then you start crying again. But you know all the while that, hey, listen, you just pray that what you've instilled in them, what their mom instilled in them and I instilled in them, it will carry them through college, and it will make, all we ask for them to do is make right decisions. Make the decisions that you are going to be proud of later on. And thus far, they have. So, you know, I'm proud of them for that. But, yeah, I don't think someone can – there's not a handbook, Adam, that I can give you right now, because yours are young, that I can give you right now and say, hey, listen, follow this handbook, and you will be all right when you drop – when you and the wife drop them off at college, y'all will be okay. No, there's no handbook like that, not whatsoever.
So what I'm preparing everybody for is when Willie is back here tomorrow, if he just starts crying on air randomly, you know why.
Exactly.
He's getting adjusted to the fact that both of his kids are officially out of the house. And to Derek's point, you know, my son turns 3 on Monday, so I'm a ways away from that. But I remember going off to college and being ready to say, I'm independent. Within a couple of days, you're calling mom and dad because you need something. So that's the thing that kids will say, speaking from experience, as I'm sure many of you can, you're ready for that independence. But as soon as it becomes real that mom and dad aren't right there for you, your phone's you're blowing up your parents' phone. It's like,
yeah.
I need cash on my campus card. I don't know how to use an ATM. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of things you think you know when you're a kid, when you're living at home with your parents, that you have no idea about. So I'm sure Willie will have plenty of conversations.
You don't need your parents until you need your parents.
Yes, yeah. That is exactly right. 615-737-1025. We were soliciting advice for Willie yesterday on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com for those of you who are empty nesters who have advice for Willie as he and his wife become empty nesters. We'll pass those along to him as he drives back today from dropping his son off at school. So the Titans have one more preseason game. Mm-hmm. They are in New Orleans over the weekend to play the Saints. And then we've got, 2 weeks until week one against the Chicago Bears. And I came across a quote from Brian Callahan this morning before practice that I thought was interesting, and I'd love to get Derek's perspective on it. So this is from Easton Freeze on Twitter. Titans head coach Brian Callahan has had a long honeymoon period since being hired. Freeze asked him about handling his team once things eventually go wrong. He's confident in his group. Quote, "You hope that what you've been preaching is more than just lip service. Anybody can lead when things are good. Adversity comes for everybody during the NFL season. I learned a lot about handling that during my early days in Cincinnati," end quote. So as Easton Freeze points out, there has been a long honeymoon period that often happens when there is a coaching change, because the new coach can do no wrong, because there was a reason for the coaching change. The old coach had worn out his welcome, and the new coach comes in. It's a breath of fresh air. Things are different. Jared has said early in the tenure of Brian Callahan, there was a lot of quote-unquote toxic positivity emanating from St. Thomas Sports Park, but that happens in all sports. I mean, I can speak to that as a sports fan. When a coaching change happens, fans mostly want it. They're excited about a new era. How long does that honeymoon period last? Is it over in week one? As soon as the kickoff of the game against the Bears, is the honeymoon period over, Derek? Or is it going to extend a little bit past that, in your opinion?
Well, that honeymoon period should be over.
Or should it be over now?
Yeah, it should be. I mean, to me, now that – I guess once you solidify your roster, I guess that's the demarcation point where, okay, that honeymoon started. Now we've got our roster set. We know who are going to be the guys we can count on. We know who are going to be our backups, and we know where our weak areas are. So that whole honeymoon phase is done with now. We don't have time to be doing some of the things that we were doing during camp. No, that's over with. We have real games now. Every game from this point on means something. So the whole kumbaya and all that other stuff, put it to the side. We got a season to get to. So to me, the honeymoon phase should be done by the first week of the NFL season. You know, but there are going to be moments within, you know, especially if they start off really good, then, you know, people are going to continue to hang on to what has been happening from the day he got hired up until that point. They're continuing to win. But if it doesn't, I'm telling you, it's going to turn very quickly. It's not like they're going to, you know, have the pitchforks and get him out of town, but it's going to go from being, you know, what it is now to, hey, listen, man, you got to win, because basically that's what this business is about. And to double down on it, you got a young quarterback, and we need to find out whether this young quarterback is the guy. So we can't have two people struggling at the same time that we're counting on. We can't have a head coach and a quarterback struggling. Somebody needs to be, you know, doing their job and doing it at a high clip. So if he's not winning, all of that, you know, Callahan's the greatest and he's a great play caller, and, you know, Rand Carthon put this team together, and this is a great team. Just watch. If they're not winning, all of that goes down the drain. That's how quickly things turn in the NFL.
And that's why I like the fact, to a certain extent, that the Titans have such an early bye week. They're off in week five. And the games that they're playing to start the season before that bye, it's an interesting mix of teams. Of course, they start at Chicago. They're home to the Jets, home to the Packers, and at the Dolphins. I feel it's a good mix of teams. Teams that are probably around them a little bit in the NFL power rankings, teams that are there's more expected of. Green Bay is expected to be a team that the people think is going to be good this season. The Jets with Aaron Rodgers coming back. I feel like it's a good mix of competition to see where this Titans team is. It's not as if though they're playing four lesser thans that can inflate their record. I like the mix of teams they're playing early on in the season in those first four games to get a sense of what this team could look like under Brian Callahan.
Yeah, I mean, what are those first four games? I didn't have them pulled up.
They are at Chicago in week one. They're home to the Jets in week two. They're home to the Packers in week three. And they're at Miami in week four.
Well, listen, that is a daunting task right there. You have three potential playoff teams. Many are predicting that they will make the playoffs in the Jets, Green Bay, and Miami. Chicago isn't no slouch either. Teams are expecting Caleb Williams to come out, and for some reason they're expecting him to recreate what C.J. Stroud was able to do. I think that's such a high bar to place on a rookie quarterback just because another rookie quarterback did well. Well, but what about the other rookie quarterbacks that turned out to be great, but their first season they struggled? I just think they're putting too much on his young man, Caleb Williams. I think he's a good quarterback, can potentially be a great one, but I think only time will tell. So that first four games of the season heading into the bye, if they can get off on a good note, if they can even start 2-2, 3-1, I think that heading into the bye week, I think that's a good thing for the Tennessee Titans. Even to the point of if they start off 1-3, let's just say that. Well, how do they play within that 1-3? That's going to dictate whether this fan base is or those in the national media are talking down about the Titans, or are they saying, hey, listen, y'all need to watch out for the Tennessee Titans, because this team, it's early on. Once they figure this out, they're not losing games by a lot. Say they lose by a field goal all three games, or lose by less than a field goal or less by all three games in all three games. I say they go 1-3. Teams are going to be looking at, or people are going to be looking at the Tennessee Titans different. Now, if they go out and they get mollywopped by the Jets, mollywopped by Green Bay, and they lose to Miami, in Miami when it's hot, it might be another story. You know, it's all about how does it look, the optics. How does it look each and every week with this team? Because everybody knows this is a team that needs to mature together, a team that needs to grow together. They got a bunch of new pieces. So it's going to take time for these pieces to come together. But if they get blown out 3-4 games, then, yeah, you're going to be seeing a lot of headlines about this Titans team and whether Brian Callahan or Rand Carthon are the two guys that need to continue being at their respective positions. I'm not saying if they go 1-3, I'm going to be thinking that, but that's just how the NFL is. If you're not winning with a new coach and a second-year GM, people are going to be coming for you.
For some reason, and I've had this feeling for a little while, maybe since the schedule was released and we found out that the Titans would be opening this season against the Chicago Bears, I just have this sense, and if I'm wrong, people can clip this and send it to me if they'd like. I get this feeling that the game against the Bears is going to go the way that the game in week one for the Titans in 2019 went against the Cleveland Browns. Remember how excited people were for that Cleveland Browns team?
Yes.
Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham.
Hell, I was excited about the Browns. I'm not even a Brown fan.
There was a lot of hype around the Browns. Now, it's a different situation, of course, but a lot of hype around the Browns, and the Titans went in there and beat the brakes off the Browns, 43-13. Now, I'm not sure the Titans would win this game against the Bears 43-13, but I just have this weird feeling that that game, because of how much excitement there's going to be about Caleb Williams and the additions that the Browns have made. They've got Roma Dunze now at wide receiver. They have DJ Moore back. I believe they added Keenan Allen,
if I'm not mistaken. So they've injury-prone Keenan Allen.
I'm a Keenan Allen fan. Big game player when he's healthy. That's exactly the caveat. But a lot of excitement about the Bears. And I think a lot of people are going to expect the Bears to walk into Soldier Field in week one and smack the Titans around. But for some reason, I just get this feeling that the Titans are going to be the ones that end up winning that game. Perhaps convincingly. I could be completely off base, but I just see these parallels between the opener in 2019 and the opener this season.
I mean, there's a huge possibility that that can happen. I would be looking for, the Titans to win this game for a myriad of reasons. One being that even though I think Caleb Williams is going to be an outstanding quarterback in this league, that first game is always that sort of filling out game. You don't have much time together. You haven't practiced a lot together. Yes, you've had two-a-days, but, man, these practices are so cut down, and you can't do certain things, and you can only put on pads certain day, and then they don't play preseason games. If they do, they only play a quarter or maybe even a couple of snaps. So they're still not getting in the work that they necessarily need to hit the field running and going. This is a young team in regards of their quarterback, some of the people on offense, some of the people on defense. They do have veteran guys, but you're asking these veteran guys to help this young quarterback sort of expedite the process. Listen, he's really good, and he may be able to do it, but I would take, a more veteran team like the Titans over a rookie quarterback and a younger sort of team like the Chicago Bears. I think the Chicago Bears have a really good team. I really do. But it's going to take time, just like the Tennessee Titans. It's going to take time for them to all get on the same page. And I'm just taking – I don't think I can take a rookie quarterback against Denard Wilson in that attack-type defense in the first game of the season. Now, if they're playing, week nine, somewhere around there, then okay, I can see, because now you've had some games under your belt as a young quarterback. You've been able to truly scout this team, as the season went on. But this is the first game of the season. There's not much film you can go back and look at. You can look at the preseason game, but they're not showing you much. You can go back to Baltimore and what they did, but Denard Wilson's philosophy may be a little bit different from what they did in Baltimore or any other place he was at. So I would take Denard Wilson in that defense in the first game over a young, I think he's going to be great, but a young quarterback in Caleb Williams.
615-737-1025, our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Derek mentioned Denard Wilson's defense. There is a unit within that defense that I want to get Derek's opinion of, and we'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick today. Derek Mason, ESPN 1025-1063, The Game. Willie and D. Mace, ESPN 1025-1063, The Game. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick today. He'll be back tomorrow. Derek Mason here, back with us. Nick Frazier as well. Derek, we do have a text on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, as it relates to our previous conversation. David in Arkansas wants to know, the Bears have already said that they aren't playing any starters in their third preseason game. Could that play a factor in week one? We never fared well in week one matchups under Mike Vrabel because he never played starters.
I mean, you just have to be, I know coaches and GMs, just organizations, period, they're very cautious of, you know, putting those guys out there too much during preseason. Yeah, you want to get them to get their feet wet. You want them to sort of, you know, build that rapport on the field during games. But you also, too, don't want anybody to get hurt. So that's a dilemma that coaches and GMs have lost sleep over, I'm sure, for years. What is the perfect balance of playing our starters compared to, you know, playing our backups? What is the best course of action to try to get them the reps they need, time on task, and not put them in a position where they can be vulnerable to injury? So they're going to continue to figure that out, I guess, until they just eliminate preseason altogether. But I think Brian Callahan said, listen, we're playing our guys no matter what. And they need to, because so many guys, key guys that they have counted on, have been injured. You have two receivers that have missed practice, probably more than that, but I'm just counting Ridley. I mean, I'm counting Boyd in Hopkins. So you've had those two guys miss time. You've had offensive linemen miss time on defense. Snead and those guys miss time. Snead, not necessarily because he's injured. They just don't want to get him injured. They're managing him sort of like a basketball player, which I don't get, but I understand it. It is what it is. So them playing in this third preseason game, I think it's a must, because this team can't afford to not hit the ground running. Chicago, they're on a plan. They're on a plan with their quarterback, even though they believe he's terrific and he can lead them to a bunch of victories this year. They're still on the plan with this quarterback. He's their future. If they start off and have a wonderful season this year, great. Absolutely great. But they have a long-term vision with Caleb Williams and this Chicago Bear team. You look at the Titans, I think the Titans are sort of thinking that same way. But even in thinking that same way, they have too many veteran guys on this team to not be able to go out there. And those veteran guys have been injured, some of them anyway. They can't afford to go out there and not have that timing all together again. People, I tell you, guys that are missing practice in a first-year offense with a young quarterback, that's not good. I'm not saying they can't make it up later on, but it's going to take them a minute. So I'm happy Brian Callahan is playing his guys, his starters, at least for a series, just to see how things go, how things roll with this unit. So I'm all for it. Will it help Chicago? I don't know. Will it hurt them? I don't know. Time will only tell. So I guess in 2 weeks we'll find out whether, you know, playing guys help or not playing guys hurt.
So in terms of players that have not been too active in training camp, Denard Wilson said yesterday that he has, quote, no doubt in his mind that L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie will be ready to play in Chicago. And that's the unit I wanted to talk to Derek about. I heard Robbie and Joe talking about this. I heard Jake Lyman and Teron Davenport talking about this yesterday when they were filling in for Jared. And by the way, they will fill in for Jared again today at 2 p.m. on Stillman & Company, about the secondary unit that the Titans have. And look, it's a pretty star-studded group that they have. A lot of notable names: Snead, Diggs, Awuzie, Adams, McCreary. A really solid group in that secondary. And my question for Derek is, what do you think? Where do you think the ceiling could be for that secondary group? And I was curious about where the Titans ranked in terms of their secondary. Now, the most recent article I could find was from Sharp Football Analysis. And this article came out, I think, right before training camp started. And their team did a ranking of the top of each position group. And they, in their secondary rankings, as of late July, so probably right at the start of training camp, they had the Titans ranked tied for 12th in terms of a secondary group. Now, if I have this right, that would have been post Jamal Adams, mm-hmm. but pre Quandre Diggs, in terms of the players that were on the Titans at the time of this ranking. So tied for 12th in the NFL, according to the analysts at Sharp Football Analysis. I'm just going to rattle off the teams they have in front of the Titans as of late July. The Browns, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bears, the Cowboys, the Ravens, the Patriots, the Saints, the Vikings, the Niners, and the Buccaneers. This group has the Titans tied with the Chiefs in terms of secondary group. So there's a lot of unknown about this group. Well, we know one thing about L'Jarius Sneed. He's a great player. But this unit hasn't been together, and there's that chemistry that has to develop, as you obviously know. Where do you feel like if everybody plays to their potential in this secondary group, how high in the secondary rankings do you think this group could be this season?
Wow. I don't know much about many of these teams that are ahead of the Titans in regards to their secondary.
So I
know
did,
a little bit about Baltimore's secondary, obviously. I know a little bit about the Browns secondary, because the Browns secondary, they've been intact for a few years now. The Jets secondary, I know about Sauce Gardner. The other guy is pretty good, pretty damn good himself, but that group and that unit is led by Sauce Gardner.
Yes.
So they get a lot of notoriety. They get a lot of airtime. Because one, they're the Jets, two, Aaron Rodgers, and then three, the defense pretty much held them together last
yes,
season.
That is very true.
So when I'm looking at the Titans, if they can stay healthy, that's the caveat in all this. That's the big question mark. Why? Because Chidobe Awuzie, he's been injured. He hasn't practiced yet, but maybe a couple of days, and he's been sidelined with an injury. L'Jarius Sneed, he's been in and out of the lineup, not because he's injured, because they don't want him to get injured. They're trying to manage this knee situation that he's had over the last couple of seasons. But then you look at Roger McCreary, who's been, you know, he's just been a good, solid player, no matter how you slice it. It's the guys behind him, Brownlee Jr., Avery, guys like that if one of these guys go down, we may have some trouble. We do. And I like Brownlee Jr. I think he's going to be a player in this league, but he's a young player, and he's still trying to figure things out. So you don't want to have to put your young player in a position where he needs to play a lot of snaps. You need him to learn behind Sneed and Awuzie and guys like that, even McQuarrie. So if this unit stays healthy, with Diggs back there, if he's back to his Pro Bowl level, which I think he will be, because it didn't seem like he dropped off last year, I think he will be. And then Adams and the guys they already have at that position, I think this could be with the coach that's coaching them, meaning Denard Wilson, I think this could be a top five secondary. But that's if they stay healthy. That's the big caveat, if they stay healthy. If they don't, this could be not a good secondary. I'm just going
to
say that.
To say the least.
It's a lot of youth. It's the youth there. Not to say that the youth won't end up being good players, but when you throw a young guy out there like Brownlee Jr., who's aggressive, who I think has the mentality to play that position, but you throw him out there his first year against, you know, Tyreek Hill, you know, DJ Moore, guys like that he's going to have to play against, that the Titans are going to have to play against this year, that doesn't set him up for success. You want him to sort of learn from the guys ahead of him and then him be able to go in. So the ceiling for me is a top five secondary. The floor is, this could be below the middle of the road secondary, but it's all predicated on whether this team can remain healthy up front, one, but more importantly, remain healthy in the secondary or not.
And we mentioned the schedule earlier in the show. There's an interesting mix of receivers that the secondary group is going to face at the start of the season. In Chicago, we mentioned DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, Keenan Allen. Against the Jets, Garrett Wilson. Against the Dolphins, of course, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Against the Packers, they have an interesting receiver group.
Yeah.
That number one, I don't think, has emerged yet, but they have Christian Watson.
Jalen Reed.
Yeah, they have Jaden Reed. They have Romeo Dobbs. Mm-hmm. Any of those guys can beat you on any given day. So, to your point, when I look at this list, but from Sharp Football Analysis, these rankings, you're right. I don't think anyone would quibble with the fact that the Cleveland Browns have the best secondary in the NFL. Denzel Ward, Greg Newsome, Martin Emerson, great. You mentioned the Jets with Sauce Gardner. They also have DJ Reed and Michael Carter.
Exactly.
You know, the Dolphins have a lot of really, they have name brand players. Of course, Jalen Ramsey, Jordan Poyer, Kendall Fuller. That's a interesting group. That's a good group that the Titans are going to have to face earlier in the season. The Bears are interesting. We know they have Kevin Byard. Mm-hmm. They have Jalen Johnson. I'm not sure how much I know about the Bears secondary after that.
Jalen Johnson's pretty good corner.
He is, absolutely. The Cowboys have Trevon Diggs. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Trevon Diggs and Deron Bland, but they lost Stephon Gilmore, who went to Minnesota.
Just signed with Minnesota.
Right. The Ravens have Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams.
But I'm going to tell you the kid you need to watch, Wiggins.
Okay.
This kid's a player out of Clemson. That kid's going to be a player, man. You watch him in the preseason, this kid's going to be a player. So I can understand they're high on him in Baltimore, and I can understand why, because this kid, he's going to be along the lines of really good to great defensive backs that the Baltimore Ravens have had, you know, since Ozzie became the GM, and now subsequently DeCosta's the GM. Now, they, just like the Titans, breed good running backs, and for a long time bred good tackles in this league, like really good ones. We believe we got one now in J.C. Latham. The Baltimore Ravens, they put out cornerbacks. They do. They have aggressive, physical, good cornerbacks, intelligent cornerbacks. So that's where the Titans want to get to. They want to get to that point. That's what Denard Walker wants to replicate. What he had when he was with the Jets, and they had one of the best secondaries in the National Football League. And when he was in Baltimore, when they had one of the best secondaries in the National Football League.
Yeah, some of these other teams that are listed above the Titans on this list, I could certainly argue with. You know, the Saints, you know, Tyrann Mathieu and Marshawn Lattimore are good players, but it feels like they're on the
slope on the
back half of their career. The Vikings added Stephon Gilmore. They have Harrison Smith. I could quibble with that. You know, the Buccaneers have one of the best safeties in the NFL in Antoine Winfield Jr. But I feel like the Titans secondary could fairly easily push its way into the top 10 if everybody clicks. And that's always the caveat with these sorts of things. If everybody clicks, if everybody stays healthy, it's the NFL. Not everybody's going to stay healthy. But if you can mitigate the injury and have those players start the majority of the games, you could be in good shape. But just with the amount that went into shoring up that position in the offseason, we haven't seen it in full yet, but week one in Chicago, it's going to be really interesting to watch what that Titans secondary is able to do, as I said, against...
I wish you guys nothing but best. The ceiling is the roof.
I was like, where is that coming from?
The ceiling is the roof.
The magic of Nick Frazier. The first thing I thought was, is my computer on? Is my volume on?
That's, you scared him, Nick.
You scared me there. But this group could be really... It's going to be fun to watch either way. And they'll have a test in week one against the Bears. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, there's a story in the NFL over the past number of days that I've really wanted to get Derek's opinion on. And, you know, of the people, especially on this station, no one is more qualified to talk about this than Derek Mason. So I wanted to get his opinion on it. Coming up next, Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game.
Explain to us the difference in practical terms between having a coach who did believe in you the way that he did and the difference between that and what was happening with Flores.
Yeah. Well, to put it in simplest terms, if you woke up every morning and I told you you suck at what you did, that you don't belong doing what you do, that you shouldn't be here, that this guy should be here, that you haven't earned this right, and then you have somebody else come in and tell you, dude, you are the best fit for this. Like, you are accurate, you are the best whatever, you are this, you are that. Like, how would it make you feel listening to one or the other? You see what I'm saying? And then you hear it, regardless of what it is, the good or the bad, and you hear it more and more, you start to actually believe that. I don't care who you are. You can be the president of the United States. You have a terrible person that's telling you things that you don't want to hear, or that you probably shouldn't be hearing. You're going to start to believe that about yourself. And so that's sort of like what ended up happening. And it was, I mean, it's basically been, what, 2 years of training that out of not just me, but, you know, a couple of the guys as well that have been here since my rookie year all the way till now.
That was Tua Tagovailoa, Miami Dolphins quarterback, on the Dan Le Batard show. I believe that was late last week, talking about the difference between his current head coach, Mike McDaniel, and his former head coach, Brian Flores. And as you might expect, Derek, it led to a lot of discussion about new school versus old school methods of coaching. And Brian Flores had an opportunity to respond to those words from Tua. Brian Flores, now the defensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings. This is what Brian Flores said in response to Tua's words on the Dan Le Batard program.
I think, you know, part of coaching is correcting. You know, I'm always going to correct. I'm always going to have a high standard. And I think, you know, look, I've done a lot of reflecting and, you know, on this situation and reflecting on the situation, communication. You know, I think there's things that I could do better for sure. And I've grown in that way. And I've tried to apply the things that I could do better and the things that I've learned, you know, over the last, you know, 2-3 years. But I would say over the long haul, I've had a lot of great relationships over my 21-year career here in the league. Players, coaches, personnel, equipment, people in the kitchen. I mean, really across the board, I've had a lot of great relationships. I'm going to continue to do that. But I'm also always looking to get better and involved. No different than as a coach, whether it's schematics or personnel or evaluations. I'm always looking to get better.
That was Brian Flores, now the Vikings defensive coordinator, formerly the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, where Tua Tagovailoa started. Well, he's currently with the Dolphins, but Flores was his coach at the start of his NFL career. So, Derek, I ran through the list of coaches, head coaches that you played for in college and in the pros, and it's an interesting list. Of course, you played for Nick Saban in Michigan State. Here you played for Jeff Fisher. In Baltimore, you played for Brian Billick and John Harbaugh. You specifically went out of your way to mention George Perlis, who was your coach at Michigan State before Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. As someone who came up in a different time, when did you feel like the shift from the type of coaching that Tua claims Flores was doing in Miami and more of the softer touch, I'll call it, in coaching? Where do you feel like that shifted? And do you think there's room for the type of coaching that you received as a young player in today's game?
For me, it started to shift once I got into the NFL, because in the NFL, these are a bunch of grown men. And, you know, you have to speak to them in a certain way. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not going to, you know, say a few things here and there, throw some curse word, F-bombs and all this. But you have to talk to them, not at them. There needs to be a level of respect. Yeah, they don't mind. Listen, at least from my understanding, you know, back then, they didn't mind you getting on them. But also when I'm doing right and it shows, then you got to be able to give that praise as well. And some coaches are great at doing both. Fish was great at doing both. You know, some coaches are not. Listen, you didn't mention Robert Lynch, who was my high school coach. And
I didn't go back far enough. I'm
those,
sorry.
Those that are from the city of Detroit back then, you understand how those coaches were. They didn't give a damn who you were, how many offers you got from colleges. They didn't care if you were a blue chip, a orange chip, a gray chip, or no chip. They were going to talk to you a certain way. If you weren't doing what they asked you to do, they were just going to speak freely. And you understood, and you took it in. And some guys took it in and walked off and didn't come back. Some guys stayed in there in the fire and came out a hell of a sword, like myself. So it just depends. Perlis, I can give you a prime story about Perlis. And this was my fault. Perlis said, I chose to leave the university after the Michigan game because all the stuff that was promised, and they promise every recruit this, and I know it. Back then, I was just gullible and young and figured, oh, they're saying this to me, then it must be true. They promised some things. I get there. That game comes, and it's nothing that they promised. I get mad and upset and throw a hissy fit, and I leave the university, and I go off at the time with my girlfriend. We leave the state of Michigan. We leave and don't tell nobody. I didn't have a cell phone. She did, but we ain't call nobody because I didn't tell her I was leaving. She didn't know I was leaving. And I don't know how my mom got in touch with me. Well, she called her because she figured, well, hell, he must be only with one person. So they called me and was like, you need to get your you-know-what back to school. Yeah, we ain't playing this. So I go back to school. I go in the Purvis's office. The Purvis's like, listen, you do this again, your ass going to be back home. You're going to be back home working at some store and this and that. And your mom, all of this crazy stuff. And I listened. And I said, you know what? All right. I'm going to go back in there. I'm going to do the things that you're asking me to do. And I'm going to be the player that I expected to be when I came in here. And everything worked out fine. Saban was the same way. Saban would get on your ass in a minute. He made people quit the program. That's how much he got on guys. But it was for a reason. The guys that stood in there, we became better people. We became better players. And that team became a better team overall. When you get into college, what I've understood now in this game, there's two approaches. I mean, you have two approaches in at this level. Either you can dog cuss somebody, but you got to know who you're doing it to. Some players don't react. They react negatively. Some guys, they react positively, and they want to prove you wrong. So they're going to go out there and do all those things that you said they couldn't do. That's the one thing, at least for me. I remember I had my 12th grade social studies teacher said, if it's up to me, you will not be getting into college. She said that to me. She said it. Luckily, it wasn't up to her, but I used that as motivation and fuel. I could have been, because that lady had rolled me the whole semester. She just didn't like me, period. She rolled me the whole semester. I could have quibbled and went and sat in a corner, and my whole trajectory would have been hampered because of what she said. But no, I didn't take it that way. I took it and I allowed it to fuel me. I said, you know what? I'm going to prove you wrong. You said I can't do it. You said I'm not going to get into college. Watch what I do. I got into college. I did everything that I wanted to do and accomplished the things that I wanted to do. Why? Because there were individuals that were telling me I couldn't do it. I wanted to prove to them wrong. I think this in this world today, and I'm just talking sports. I'm not talking about in life. I'm talking about in sports. These individuals come in here with a sense of entitlement. That's what they do. I'm just calling it how it is. These young men and women, some of them, they come in with a sense of entitlement. Why? Because they've been told at every step, you're the greatest. You can't do no wrong. When you do wrong, it was somebody else's problem. It was somebody else's mistake. It wasn't your mistake. We'll clear it up. We'll clean it up for you. So as they start going through this process, and not every kid is like that, but as they start going through this process, they build up this sense of, you know, I'm him. No, you're not him. Damn it. You got to earn that right to be him. Some guys want to walk into situations as if they made it already. And sometimes coaches have to knock them down a little bit, but you got to understand how to do it and who to do it to. I'm not saying Flores was wrong or right, but what he had to understand, and it seems like he understands that now listening to his answer. There are some guys you can do it to. There are some guys you can't do it to. There are certain limits you can push, and there are certain limits you can't. Some of these kids nowadays are so thin-skinned. They walk in as if their stuff don't stink. And the minute somebody gets on them, it's everybody else's problem. It's, don't talk to me like that. Oh, I can't handle it. No. Well, if you walked in with that attitude, and I'm telling you, hey, listen, you're not there yet. Like, you need to get better, or you're bad right now, and you don't deserve to be on this team. Okay, well, what do I need to do to change that? I can't envision Flores getting up every day. Not to say that he probably didn't say some of this stuff, because I'm sure he probably did, and he regrets it now. I'm sure he didn't get up every morning saying, you suck, Tua, every morning. Well, Tua, you did suck. You were bad, Tua, before they got Tyreek Hill and before Waddle really started to come on and before they got that, you know, A-Train and all those guys in the backfield. You were not good, Tua. And I loved Tua in college. I loved Tua in college. He was like the dude for me. One, because he went to Alabama, was playing under Coach Saban, but I thought he was a damn good quarterback.
I was about to say that Tua did not play for a kind and gentle coach in college.
But Saban understood how to massage the quarterback.
Got it.
He knew, there are some positions you have to massage a little bit. The quarterback is like a golfer. You can't get on him. If he's missing putts, you can't sit there and be in his ear all day, every day. You can't. He's not gonna react positively. With quarterbacks, like golfers, like kickers, you gotta massage them sometimes. Yeah, you're doing a good job. Yeah, don't worry about it. The receiver needs to go his depth. Yeah, even though it wasn't the receiver's fault. Yeah, the offensive line got, you know, did better job blocking. Well, they gave you 3 seconds. How many more seconds they need to give you? 5, 10, 15, 20? What is it? Tua, you were not a good quarterback, okay? You linked up with a coach that has your same personality. A sort of laid back, meek, sort of I don't want to ruffle any feathers type of guy. Kumbaya, everybody's great. You know, even when you do bad, don't worry about it. Hit him on the backside. Don't worry about it. We'll get it next time. That works sometimes. It does. I'm not saying there's no place for it. But then there has to be a point where I can get on your ass and you know why I'm doing it. And you say, okay, all right, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen again. But when you're continuing to do the same things wrong that I asked you to do right and I'm showing you what to do right, what more? I've tried just about everything. Again, I'm not saying Flores is right, but I'm saying is he has to know who he's coaching, for one, and then that player has to know that, hey, listen, what is he trying to get out of me? Why didn't you go to his office? I'm not saying that he did, but it doesn't seem like Tua didn't bring that up. Why don't you go to you are the starting quarterback of an NFL team. You have the ability, like nobody else in that building, to go into your coach's office and sit him down and say, these are the things that I don't like. You're the only person that can do it, and maybe a veteran guy that has had Pro Bowls and all this other stuff, maybe they can, but you can go in that office and tell him, I don't like the way you're coaching me. You're the only person that can do it. You're the only person that can go to the GM's office and say, listen, this coach, we need to, all three of us need to have a talk. I hate when individuals, especially in sports, get on somebody else's sort of podcast and start spilling the beans without talking to the guy that they need to talk to clear everything up. You were with Flores 2 years, I think.
I think that's right, yes.
If he was beating you down that much, and I'm not saying that he wasn't, go into his office and have a sit down, you, him, the GM, and your agent, and say some things need to change. I cannot succeed under this type of environment. But you didn't do it. You're the only person in an organization that could do it. Like Will Levis, he's the only person probably in that organization that could pull a head coach, say, hey, we need to talk in your office. Get the GM, bring him down. All three of us need to talk. He's probably one of few that can do it in that building. You do it if it's bothering you. That's my whole thing. I just think some of these kids are skinned. It's just too damn soft, and you can't talk to them. And the minute they don't get their way, they want a hissy fit, and, oh, I want a new contract. I want this. I want that. I'm not saying that Flores, what he did, was right. I'm just saying that, listen, sometimes have a talk with the person that is doing you wrong. Have a talk with them. You can get the GM from upstairs. Hell, you can You could call the owner. You can. You are the quarterback of the franchise. Everybody, let's sit down, because this ain't cool. I can't flourish. I can't be the best version of myself if you keep on dumping on me every single day. Let's talk and clear this up. What, you don't like me? That's all he had to do. But to get on somebody's podcast and do this. It's like, dude, pick up the phone and call a man or talk to him while he was there. That's my whole thing. If I had a problem with Harbaugh, I talked to Harbaugh. I had a problem with Fish. I went in Fish's office and talked with him. I don't have time to be getting on somebody's podcast or getting in front of the media and then spilling all my beans and my head coach or my position coach coming in the room like, dude, you could have just talked to me. I think that's what these young people are losing the sight of. That's what I preach to my son every day. If you got a problem, go talk to the person you have a problem with. You don't want to play tomorrow like I told him when he was in the 11th grade. And matter of fact, this is when, I'm sorry I'm going over time, but he was in Pee Wee League football. My son said, "Dad, I don't want to play no more." I said, "You know what? You go tell the coach you don't want to play." But I'm not telling him, because if it comes from your dad, it comes different to the coach. You go talk to him and you tell him why you don't want to play. My son went to talk to him and told him why he didn't want to play. The coach tried to get him to play. He was like, "I understand." And he didn't play anymore. He did the same thing in high school. So it can be done, but it has to be a taught behavior. You got a problem with somebody, go talk to them. Don't get on somebody else's podcast or talk to somebody else about it. Talk to that person about it, and maybe, just maybe, y'all can clear it up.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jonathan Hutton will join us next. We'll get his thoughts on this and other things about the NFL and the Titans. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan, Derek Mason, ESPN, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Hey, guys. Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.